I'm Angie, and I am an alcoholic. I'd like to apologize for not being around this weekend and socializing with you, but I was out exploring the country and getting lost and going into junk shops and just had the time of my life. I was over someplace called Seven Devils Road or something like that. It got a little misty up there and raining, and I thought, oh my God, and I did get lost a couple of times. But you have a beautiful state. Beautiful state. Just loved it. It's a great place to visit. But I'm from Southern California, and I just get, there's something about my lungs that just can't stand all this clear air. I just gotta get back there to the smog. But it's good to be louder. God, isn't that great? Nobody's ever told me that before. I'll try to shout it. It's good for me to be here, and I'd like to thank the committee for having me here this morning and to be your guest speaker this morning. It's my privilege. I belong in Alcoholics Anonymous. I am the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous because I belong here, and I never belong anyplace else. And I'm sitting here looking at the lady that has a week, and I see the tears, and I see the fear, and it reminds me of how it was when I was introduced to you. And what a fantastic journey I have had because of the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. I am grateful today that I had absolutely nothing going for me by the time I got here, because I am such a stopper along the way that I probably would have taken me longer. So I am glad that my higher power saw to it that I had nothing to claim me before I came here, because I am truly grateful to this program and to my higher power for the person that I am today. And today I do walk with the dignity of a sober woman alcoholic in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I am one of those that has conceded to my innermost self that I am a real alcoholic, and I have completely given myself to this program. I am one of those that has had no choice but to completely give myself to this program. I've taken many inventories, and I've looked back over my life, and I realized I was always weird, and I was always different, and I never fit in anywhere as far back as I can remember. I was born into the wrong family. I was born into this family that wasn't ready for me then, and it isn't ready for me now. In fact, my mother, she's so funny. When I go visit her and she's got friends, she'll pull me aside and she'll say, "Now don't you be telling them anything of that stuff about you being an alcoholic." She says, "You're not an alcoholic. You were always that way. When you were 2 years old, you were that way." And she's great at taking my inventory. And when I tell her some of the things that happened to me during my drinking, her eyes get real wide, and she'll say, "Well, if you're an alcoholic, you don't get it from my side of the family." And so, she's just marvelous. One time she was explaining to somebody, or one of her relatives, how I happened to be here with you. And she said, "Well, you know, she was married to this guy, and in order to help him, she went to Alcoholics Anonymous. And she started helping all these people. And now they fly her all over the country to help all of them." And she says, "Now she's never had a problem of her own, but she's just so good at helping them." She was sincere when she said it, too. And it's a credit to me, and I'll take the credit that I didn't crack up laughing. When I was born and brought home from the hospital, they still didn't have a name for me. And the reason for that is because my daddy wanted to name me after his girlfriend, and my mother's narrow-minded. I had an older sister that was perfect. They always held her up as somebody I should be like. And she screwed it up for me. I used to hate her for it. I was a type of a kid that was an individual, and I showed it in many ways. I used to think I was unique until I came to you. They were divorced when I was 7, and she would say things to me like, "You're just like your father," and I knew what her opinion was of him. She didn't like him too well. So she would send me to the nuns so they could teach me to be a lady. And the nuns' conception about being a lady wasn't impressive to me then, and it isn't impressive to me now. I was the type of a little kid that all they ever had to say is, "Thou shalt not." And I may not have thought of doing it before, but as soon as they said, "Thou shalt not," I had an overwhelming desire to do it. It seems to me that I was born with an emptiness in my soul, an absolute yearning, a longing, a hunger to be loved, to be wanted, to be accepted, so desperately. And as a child, I wanted to do anything that I could to make my mother accept me. And it was that, trying to make her accept me. But no matter what I did, she never was able to. I know today that my need was so great that no person could possibly have filled it up. But I didn't know that as a child. So you see, when somebody dared me to raise the nun's skirt, I did. I raised her skirt to see what she wore under all them clothes. And they 86 me from catechism. And I was an embarrassment to my mother again. But when I got to school the next day, all the kids thought I was terrific. And I got all that attention, and everybody pointed me out, and it just seemed to fill up some of them empty places. It just seemed that I was finally there. You see, most of my life, I was always surprised when anybody recognized me the second time they saw me. I felt invisible. And so when I got all that attention, it turned something on inside of me. And I believe, I am one of those that believes that I always had the pilot lit. All I ever needed was a fuel. And this came to pass. I ran off to be with my daddy when I was 12 years old because I had gotten into so much trouble there was only one thing to do was to go. And I always knew it was going to be better over there. All of my life I always looked for it to be better over there. And he was over in the San Fernando Valley where he'd taken up lighthouse keeping with a lady with 8 kids. And all he wants is one more and here comes trouble. He used to take people up north to pick grapes and prunes, and we were fruit pickers. And you know, God made 2 kinds of Mexicans. That's fruit pickers and non-fruit pickers. And I ain't no fruit picker. They try to make a fruit picker out of me. But we stayed beyond the season with the Gallo brothers. And they gave my dad a case of sherry wine, and somebody must have said, "Thou shalt not." I had a big water glass of that sherry wine, and when it went down and hit my stomach, it went off like a firecracker, and everything felt good. It's too bad something that good has to be wasted on social drinkers that don't appreciate it. Jesus! Anything gonna make me feel that good, I want to keep that feeling. And I have me some more. I mean, that's life, isn't it? More. If it's good, more. It's never enough. And I came to the next day, because that's what happened. I just overshot the goal, and I didn't even know when I did it. I came to, and my hair stuck to my face, where I'd thrown up all over myself, and my clothes are torn, where I got in a fight with somebody. I didn't remember what had happened. And it seems that that's the way it was with me. The first time I ever drank, I got drunk and got in a blackout, and then I came to. And I had a sense of shame. I had a sense of being dirty. A fear that went inside of me all the way through me. Because I knew I had done something terrible and I didn't know what it was. And I started a lifetime of looking at people's faces, trying to figure out what I had done. Terrified to know and terrified not to know, and have to put up front a cover-up like I didn't care, because I always had to put up a front. I don't know why, I couldn't say what I felt for so long. And that's the way it was. I was just a child. I started running the streets after that because nobody wanted me for long. I went back to Orange County, and I went to my mother's house, and she didn't want me home. I was not quite 14 years old, and I was a child. And yet I felt old and used up. I don't know, every so often I felt that way in my life. I joined the gangs and lived here and there and everywhere. And you know, we Mexicans love to join the gangs and beat each other up. And we call it fun, and it is fun, it's exciting. And I became a party girl. God, did I love the booze and the boys and the cha-cha-cha. Jesus, in that order. And I love them parties. I love getting drunk before the parties, but then nobody else wanted me drunk because I had so bad news there. And they'd say things to me like, why do you drink the way you do? Why don't you take some olive oil and buttermilk before you drink so you won't get so drunk? And all it did was ruin my clothes when I threw up. I was one of the original topless, bottomless dancers in them parties. I don't even get paid for it. I don't even remember it. But the girls are always so willing to tell me that stuff the next day. And you know, I resented women most of my life. When I got sober, I didn't feel comfortable with women because I had always felt so dirty in comparison to the other women. I always measured my insides by the way they looked on the outside. I also didn't know how to work, so I took up a vocation called burglary. It's still not very feminine. Anybody lived over in Lemon Heights in Orange County in the late 40s or early 50s, I'd like to make my amends today. I got an absolute thrill out of breaking into people's houses and taking away their valuables. I had developed a set of values and a set of attitudes that said, I don't care what I do as long as it's me doing it, baby. And there's only one sin, and that's to get caught. Well, this came to pass, too. The day came when the state of California discovered me, and they sent me up to do a little bit of time. They sent me up to do 9 months. They don't like for me to break into people's houses. But because I don't know how to be good, I do 13 months, and I get scared. I think I'm never going to get out of there. Well, so when they opened the doors that let me out of this girl's penitentiary, I got out, and I started to think. And for God's sakes, you know I'm not in any shape to think. Thinking and me are bad news. Sober sometimes, you know. Sometimes God and I think we're thinking the same thing. And we wind up knowing it's me and not him. But in those days, it was really bad news. What I thought of is, I've been in prison, and I didn't ever know any girl that had ever been in prison. I'm from a little tiny town where everybody knew where I'd been. And I didn't have any education and any vocation. So what I thought of doing is, I better go find me a husband. I mean, that's the answer to every girl's dreams, isn't it? So I went out husband hunting in places that husbands are not to be looked for. Unfortunately for both of us, I found one. He was a dreamer like me. He built them castles in the air, and I lived in them. And 3 months later, we were pregnant, and I was married in that order. And I married a mainline heroin user, and you just don't live happily ever after with one of those. Very exciting, but not very happy. He had an idea of what a good Mexican wife should be, and I had an idea of what a good Mexican husband should be, and never the twain shall meet. And I got the scars to prove it, and he's got the scars to prove it. And he introduces me to little white pills with crosses on them. I don't know what they are, but I sure know what they do to me. I had one eyeball over there and one over there, and I'd make baby clothes all night long. Put together table first. You can have more fun with Benzedrine and baby clothes. I've driven down the street today, and I've seen them bumper stickers that say, I found it. Man, I found it. I found that I could be way up there and way down here at the same time. Because I gotta take uppers and then I gotta take downers and then I drink booze on top of it. And there isn't any feeling like it to be pulled to both directions at once. If I'd have continued to drink that way, I'd have never come to Alcoholics Anonymous because I lived for thrills and excitement. I couldn't stand the reality of my what my life was, you see. By the time I had my baby, I realized that this man didn't want to be married. As self-centered as I was, I figured out he didn't want to be married to me. So I had to not be there. When they put that baby in my arms, I felt like finally, somebody belongs to me. This baby inspired feelings within me that nobody ever has before or since. The closest anybody has come has been her sister, and yet it's never really been the same. When I was a child in a woman's body, and I held that baby in my arms, and I promised her I would never beat her, mistreat her, abandon her, and discard her as I had been. And I meant it with every fiber of my being, because I adored my baby in the tears of joy that were in my eyes, and all the hopes and all the dreams that I had as a 20-year-old old woman. Old woman with a child's emotion. But I am an alcoholic and I am a woman alcoholic. And when I drink, I got absolutely no choices and no rights. When I drink, I'm gonna do what's in front of me to do, whether I want to do it or not. Deep down inside of me, there was always a spark of the woman that I am today. But I thought there was a monster that lived within me. And I took that baby and her sister to places that children should not be taken because I am an alcoholic. I have an allergy of the body coupled with an obsession of the mind. And I never in my wildest dreams imagined that was what was wrong with me. I just thought that there was something horribly wrong and abnormal about me. I left their daddy after the second one was born. I had one, and a year later I had another one. And I saw I had 12 years and 12 babies. And the first one's okay, and you love her a lot and all that. But the second one, it was totally unexpected. You see, the romance of being a mother had long since died. And the responsibility of daily taking care of children was not within me because I didn't know how to be a mother. When I left their daddy, by that time I was already going back to the parties and the boys and the bars and all that insanity, and my children were in my way. And I started looking for another husband because God knows them kids and I needed somebody to take care of us. I was never enough just for me. I always felt I needed a man to take care of me. Somebody to love me, to buy me some little house and maybe even rent one. Some little corner of somebody with a vine-covered cottage with a tortilla smells and the enchiladas and little kitties and the slippers at 5 o'clock. Kind of a Mexican Aussie and Harriet type of them. I went out husband hunting and I didn't find a husband. You see, there seemed to be a feeling, something going on with me that I didn't discover till I was sober, and I'm glad I didn't discover there. Because those men that wanted me, I didn't want. I know today it was because I didn't have any respect for anybody that could possibly want me. And those that didn't want me, those were the ones that I fell in love and pursued. Because the man I fell in love with that day, in those days was named CB, and that stood for Crazy Bastard. So, you know, he was exciting. He was an exciting man. And if I'd have continued to drink and eat pills like I was in those days, I would have never come to Alcoholics Anonymous. But many a time I had to come home where there was not enough chemicals to kill what I had in the cold water shack, that when I would walk in and turn the light on, the sink would be black with cockroaches and there was mice in that filthy floor. And in that shack lived those two little girls that the romance of being a mother had long since died. And the responsibility for them weighed heavy upon me. And they had the big eyes. The big eyes where they were terrified of making any noise and crying. Because if they made any noise, the monster would come too. And I would come to and I would start screaming and yelling, and then I would start hitting them. And once I started hitting them, it was like a sheet came down and I had absolutely no control. I would hit them and hit them and hit them, and I wouldn't stop and I couldn't stop. And it was like watching somebody else, and I'd say to myself, for God's sake, stop. And I wouldn't stop until there was blood gushing out of their mouths and their nose, and they were battered children. And when a semblance of sanity would come to, and I would see what I had done to them, two little girls, I hated me. I hated me so desperately. I've heard many women come into the program and say that they've taken away their children, and they're very sad, and I know that they are. But in those days, I used to think, for God's sake, would somebody please take this little girl and give him a normal life, because I knew I couldn't. I knew I was the only buffer that they had between them and life, and it was me they needed protection from. I don't share this part of my story with you because I'm proud of it. You know I'm not proud of it. But I can't possibly let it shame me anymore. I can't possibly let myself be in bondage to it anymore. It took me years and years to be able to forgive myself in sobriety for the things I had done to them two little girls. I come and share this with you because someplace, somewhere, somebody's out there that needs to hear this part of my story. And I come to free me and to free you. It is because of this, or in spite of it, that my girls and I are very close. And we've talked about those days. And they said to me, Mom, we know you always loved us. And thank God for the forgiveness that our children are able to have, that my children were able to have for me. It was my own forgiveness for myself that took so long. You see, I am an alcoholic. 5 years of total insanity went by, and then I started getting letters through the mail from my dope fiend husband that was someplace in Texas getting the cure, and he says, babe, this time it's going to be different. And so it was. We made the Mexican Geographical. We moved 20 miles from Mama, and we bought a little ranch with the chickens and the turkeys and the horses, and we were going to be farmers. We joined the PTA, and I married him in the Catholic Church. And that's gone to any length for a Catholic, especially since he was a Methodist. We were going to be like everybody else. And I'm a firm believer you can place me in the best of circumstances. And sooner or later, I got to create whatever is inside of me, because it's inside my skin I can't live. He starts making the run to his back to Orange County to his connection, and I start making the run to the wineries. Because the best thing I can say about Mira Loma is it's in the middle of four wineries. And I'm a wino. Somehow it was not there. It wasn't long before it just was not there. I couldn't be the way them people look. I can't be. Because you see, it's inside my skin. I can't live. And when he starts making the run to the wineries, to the connection, and I start making the run to my wineries, and my drinking changed, and I became a bedroom drinker. Somehow the fun was out of, no longer was there any fun about parties and boys and cha-cha-cha and nightclubs and getting dressed up. There wasn't that anymore. I became a bedroom drinker. I would go and buy 4 or 5 gallons of wine at a time, and I'd go home and I'd go to bed. And I'd go to bed and cry and drink and read the Bible. Today I like to open my Bible every so often to see all the wine splatters in it. Now is a time when I know what the words agony, despair, and utterly loneliness is. I know those words. I learned them in Alcoholics Anonymous, where I learned the meaning of many words. But I experienced those feelings in that bedroom in Mira Loma, where I used to lay in my bed in a fetal position and cry out in agony. I had come to the place in my drinking where I drank and I drank and I drank, and my body was drunk, but my mind was in agony, and there was just no longer any peace. There was no peace. I could not figure out why God did not hear me. You see, I prayed so much. I finally figured it out. Someplace in there it talked about the lambs and the goats. And I said, man, I'm one of them goats. And I felt that because I was one of them goats, I didn't have a chance of a snowball in hell. So I did what I thought what I wanted to do by this time. Every hope and dream was gone out of my life, and what I thought was I'm going to kill myself. You see, it was them people who called relatives, them people called friends were not coming around me anymore. They had got tired of the physical and mental abuse that I had given them. So I had nobody that gave a damn whether I lived or died. I waited until this man was home one day, and I saved my sleeping pills. And I went and took a bath and told him I was going to die. Just in case I died, I didn't want to be caught dead dirty. It's been months since I'd taken a bath, I don't think. But I prepared to die, and I was serious. If there was ever any peace before in my life, before I had it in this program, it came to me when I made that decision to die. You see, I was tired. And so I took all these sleeping pills, and I came to a couple of days later. Enraged to be alive. Enraged to be alive. I came to on the loneliest day of my life where I couldn't drink and I couldn't be sober and I couldn't live and I couldn't die. Where this man had been in bed with me both nights and never once did he consider taking me to a doctor or to a hospital when I was in that coma. It's been a long time in this program for me to look upon that day without sinking into that pit of self-pity, when nobody cared whether I lived or died, and I couldn't die, and I couldn't live, and I couldn't drink, and I couldn't be sober. And I realized today that my higher power had his hand upon me, even then, because that very day there was a knock on the door, there was a lady from the PTA, and if there's somebody I don't want to see, it's a lady from the PTA. But in a moment of weakness, I let her in, and I tell her my tale of woe. Now, you know I got a tale of woe. About this SOB and how he done me wrong. I wasn't one that ever told anybody anything about me. And throughout the conversation, she asked me if I ever heard of Al-Anon. And I never heard of Al-Anon, but I got the idea as she talked that if I would go there, he would straighten up, and then everything would be all right with me. So I went, she stayed with me and cleaned me up and took me to Al-Anon. And somehow I didn't fit in Al-Anon. I guess I felt like a whore would in a nunnery. There was absolutely no identification between me and them square broads. But you know, they hugged me. And they loved me. And I remember that. I remember the hugs. I remember the hugs. And every so often this lady comes and takes me to Al-Anon. I don't want to go back there anymore because I never wanted to go any place where I felt uncomfortable, so dirty next to them women. But I'm a people pleaser, and I don't know how to tell her I don't want to go. I just go. I don't hear anything. I'm always really out to lunch with all them chemicals inside of me. Yeah, I ran into her after 11 years, and she says they used to laugh at me. And we do that here in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not a bad kind of a laugh at each other. It's just that some of us just come in here weirder than others. I just sit there and grin. I call it my Al-Anon smile. I want to clarify that. Sometimes I've had some people take offense and say, think I'm putting the Al-Anon down. What I'm doing is, those were my Al-Anon days, and that was my Al-Anon smile. The Al-Anons kept me preserved until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. For one thing, I heard something called release. I finally heard that. Now, I knew I couldn't divorce him. I'd married him in the Catholic Church. I had enough points against me being a goat without having divorced him, too. But I used to contemplate justifiable homicide because if anybody deserved to die, he did. It would have been a mercy killing. So when I heard the word release, I went home and told him in detail how I was going to release him. And he used to sleep with his clothes on and the knife under the pillow. Me and my big self would sit in the corner and watch him. As he'd be a dozing off, I'd go take a little peek. And he'd go, whoa! And he would say unkind things to me. He'd say, baby, I may have a monkey on my back, but you got an orangutan. One day I came home and he was gone. He took everything with him. He wasn't planning on coming back. And he was the kind of person that always left something behind so he could claim it. This time he left nothing and I knew he was gone. And that's the way it had to be. Because though that life was unbearable, it was familiar. And fear has been the great compromiser of my life. And I'd have stayed there till he'd have killed me or I'd have killed him. Because I didn't know there was another way to go. I was always petrified by my fear. And the same Al-Anon lady took me to an AA meeting. I'm thinking she's trying to get rid of me. Well, them Al-Anons found me out. They want to get rid of me. She took me to the young people's meeting in Pomona in August of 1964. And I sat in the back. And I listened to the sounds of Alcoholics Anonymous. I listened to that belly laughter. That smile that reaches to the soul, that shine in the eyes, and that happy talk. And those are the sounds of Alcoholics Anonymous. The very first thing that attracted me to you was what was happening between you, because I knew I had never had it. I've often wondered, what is it and where does it come from? And it came to me one day, and I consider it a spiritual experience. When I realized that these are just empty rooms, that which happens in here, we bring it with us. Every one of us, and it intermingles and becomes a group conscience, a higher power. Call it whatever you want, but there is a dynamic something that happens when you and I come together that has never happened any place else that I've ever been in. And if you're new like I was in those days, you don't have it. There was that spark way down inside of me that never died, but I didn't have what them people had. A newcomer, if you be lucky like me, if you be lucky like me, I just sat back there and I let it wash over my soul and I hungered for it. I wanted it so desperately. I just thought, I'm too bad I'm not an alcoholic. If there's another name for the disease that you and I have, it's called I Ain't Got It. Willing to be weird and different, had always been different, apart from. But never once did it cross my mind that I was an alcoholic. You see, I didn't know what that word meant, for one thing. And alcohol and pills were an answer to me. They were an answer to that hell, that terror, that agony that was inside of me, that horrible loneliness, that horrible self-consciousness. That alcohol and pills always rounded up the edges. And so it programmed out the only thing that I understood. I loved the magic of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it programmed out the only thing I understood in those days, don't you know? I looked around at all them sober, single, good-looking young guys, and I said, man, I'm gonna get me one of those. And so I did. It was the sickest one there. He had to be. I got radar. But I'm one that believes that it takes what it takes, and that's what it took for me. For 10 months, I came around Alcoholics Anonymous as a visitor. In Pomona, in those days, I'd go around the room, and everybody gave their name, and when he came to me, I'd say, I'm Angie, and I'm a visitor. Nobody ever said you don't belong here. Somehow you understood I've been kicked in the teeth by life and rejected by everybody I come in contact with, and I couldn't have stood any more rejection. You put your arm around me and you said, keep coming back. Do you know what that feels like when you're used to people saying, keep on going, weirdo? What a disappointment it was to me when I found out you were telling that to everybody. I feel a little guilty along the way, so I stopped drinking and doubled up on the Miltowns and Benzedrine and get weirder. And then this guy wants to get rid of me. Now, I wasn't easy to get rid of because I didn't have a backup. So I moved to Pomona to be closer to the action. And I walked into a room one day. There's a cute little boy with big blue eyes and blonde hair, and he's talking and saying, he just gotten out of YTS, and he says he don't have a girlfriend, he don't have a surfboard, and he don't have a car. And I think to myself, come here, little boy, I'll take care of you. And I did. I taught him everything he knows, and today he's practicing it someplace else. God, and I educated that young man on sick bras, I'm telling you. It had been 12 years since I had had a sober day, and I didn't know that what I was going through was called withdrawals. I thought that was sobriety. And I didn't like women, and I didn't trust men, and that didn't leave me much. But after that relationship was over, he decided to become a minister, and I'd like to think that somehow in my small way, I helped push him over to God. They didn't have any drying out places in Pomona in those days, and all I did was walk them streets without any skin on. And he was the one that would walk with me. He was the one that would hold me close. Whenever the devil was within me so bad, all I could do was rip at myself and throw and kick and bite because I couldn't stand the feelings within me. And he was the first man that had ever been kind to me. He was the first man that had ever been gentle with me. And everywhere that he went, he wanted to take me with him, and he seemed so proud to be seen with me. Me that had always been so used to being mistreated, abused physically and otherwise by every man I'd ever had. And I'd have stayed there with that young man forever if I could have. I maneuvered and controlled and did everything that I could because fear has been the great compromiser of my life. Bill Wilson said in his writings that the good is the enemy of the best. And I truly believe it. I always clutched to any little bit of good that ever came my way because I was terrified that there wouldn't be anything else. I know today that you and I do not come together by accident. I truly believe that we come together by divine appointment and that every relationship has its beginning and its parting. And even though it's still not easy for me to let go today, it's easier than it, and it gets easier as I go on because I know that there's a fulfillment in every relationship, the fulfillment of that appointment. And when you go on your way, you take a little bit of me with you, and you leave a little bit of you behind, and we're never the same because our lives have touched. And I'm truly grateful to Bruce when he came into my life in those days. I'm grateful that my higher power sent this gentle young man into my life to teach me about warmth that a man can have for a woman. It was not my last drunk. I had another drunk in me. And I hope it's not my last one. 6 months after that, I got well. And everybody gets well in 6 months, don't they? Got bored in Alcoholics Anonymous. And they were all saying the same thing over and over and over again. And I know today that that is a measuring stick for me. You see, this program is designed for me to know the most fascinating person in the world. Guess who that is? You don't suppose that I come to these meetings for you, do you? I don't think you come for me either. It has truly been an adventure. And if I be sober till December the 22nd, this coming December, I will celebrate my 15th birthday. And the miracle for me is not that I've come to Alcoholics Anonymous, because hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people come here and don't stay. The miracle for me is that I am still here and that I belong here. I belong here. But where before I had thought I was a little alcoholic, now I thought I was too alcoholic. And I've heard many people say that if you forget your last drunk, you haven't had it. And I remember the terror that came back to live with me immediately, once I picked up that drink. And so coming back, they start reading things that are all wrong for people like me. They read something that says, rarely have we seen a person fail. And I don't know about the rest of you, but when they say rarely, I know somebody's not going to make it. And they say, there are such unfortunates, they are not at fault, they seem to have been born that way. Boy, I'm really screwed. My mother will tell you I was born that way. But a little further on down it says, and then there are those that have grave emotional and mental disorders. I am so grateful they have that in there because my sobriety sounds like some people's drunkalog. I kid you not. I just can't live in a cold, dark room without any structure, without any guidance, without anything and anybody to ever depend on and all of a sudden come to Alcoholics Anonymous and feel a part out. It took me a long, long time, a lot of one day at a time to feel a part of. And I don't know when it came. I just know that I was there one day. And the reason I feel is because a little further on down it says, many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Now, I'm not presumptuous to stand up here and tell you I got the capacity to be honest, because I really don't know. I do know that deep down inside of me, the essence of my sobriety, the essence of my life today is my sobriety. And the yearning of my heart is to do whatever my higher power has spared me to do. Because I am one of those that believe that I have been spared. I truly have been spared. I have been sober long enough to realize that the idea of surrender does not come to every alcoholic. I have seen people that have suffered, that so terribly the innermost suffering, and yet the idea of surrender has not come to them. I don't know why I know that I have a daily reprieve contingent upon the maintenance of my spiritual condition. I don't know why I know that besides the book telling me. I do know, because I have seen so many of my friends go out and do it again and have a hard time coming back. In fact, remember that young man that I tell you that I married? He drank after 10 and a half years. He came to live here in Oregon. They gave him a church, and he came to live here in Oregon, and he forgot, and we have a built-in forgetter. And I know this. I know that I have it too. So I stay very close to this program, very, very close. I go to lots of meetings, and I read the book, and I work the steps, and I talk about the innermost part of me when I've got that, because I am far from having it made, and I've still got that every so often. You know, my boyfriend was supposed to come with me this weekend. He called me up at 8 o'clock the night before we were supposed to leave it and say he wasn't coming. He had a pretty good reason, sort of, but, you know, I had instant hate. Just instant hate. How dare he? How dare he? Yeah, I woke up at 5 o'clock in the morning and I still hated him. And so I had to write about it. And after I wrote about it, I had to tell somebody about it. Because I can't stand that anymore. I used to live in it daily and I can't stand it anymore. Because of this program, I have known what it is to walk in the sunlight of the Spirit. And so when my journey began, I didn't know what would happen to me as time and time went on. And you know, it's gotten so good, that sometimes I wonder how it could get any better. And it gets better and better and better. And people used to tell me that, and I would just think it wasn't so. How can it get better? The bucket is full, and the tub is full, they're all full. Only the container has grown. And that's what has happened to me. In the beginning, my container was very small, and they all knew more than me. And I'm telling you that when they used to call me an alcoholic, it was a step up from the things I'd been called. And they knew, some of them knew more than me, and then I knew more than some of them, and then I couldn't stand some of them, and then I hated one. God, I hated this guy. He'd been sober 12 and a half years and didn't know nothing. The reason I knew he didn't know nothing is because he went to meetings every night. The reason I knew he went to meetings every night is because I went to a meeting every night. I went to a meeting every night for the first 2 years, and I used to call it dedication. And as I got honest, I figured out that it was the alternative was to stay home with me. And I couldn't stand me. At least for that little while, I would glean what was in those meetings. So, and I had a lady that was going to be my sponsor. I ain't asking any of them women to be my sponsor. I don't want nobody telling me no. But one volunteered. And she would say, you gotta stay home and learn to be a mother. You gotta give up that young man, or one day, he will, if you stay sober, he will give you up. There's too big an age difference. There was 11 years. And if you don't stay home and learn to be a mother, them children will grow up. And you'll have no communication. I had never been able to live without a man. Some man to hold me close and make that lonely, horrible something go away at least for a little while. Now I'm not talking about sex, I'm talking about that loneliness, that fear that was inside of me that I was always willing to grasp for the instant instead of staying around for the later. And I was no longer able to, I was not capable of being a mother sober than I ever was drinking. You see, I was still a child in a woman's body, and I never learned how to be a mother. And thank God they're old women now. I don't have to be a mother now because I never really mastered the art. I had a lot of trouble with depression. So I did the only thing that I could figure out to do is I gave up the sponsor. I knew how to live without her. So when I had these horrible resentments, I didn't know what to do with them. So after the meeting, I'd go to some of them old-timers that looked like they knew what they're talking about, and I put a smile on my face. I didn't want them to think I was a bad person. And I'd ask, how do you get over resentments? And they'd say, turn it over easy, does it, this too shall pass, one day at a time, go home, read the book, keep coming back, and don't drink. So... And that is the answer, isn't it? So I'd go home and I did all this neat stuff and I came back the next night and it didn't work. I still hated him. I didn't want to go back to the same old timer. I'd go to somebody else. I didn't want him to know I was a dummy. So again, I'd ask, how do you get over resentments? And again, they'd say, turn it over easy, does it, this too shall pass, one day at a time. Go home, read the book, keep coming back, and don't drink. After a while, I get the message. They don't know the answer either. I don't know what else to do to get what you got, so I just keep on keeping on keeping on. And newcomer, that's all the message that I really have to give you besides my experience. Just keep on, keep on, keeping on. And survives. Some days I just survive, and the most successful that I am every day is I just don't drink while I'm surviving. Because if I drink, I don't survive. I just survived. And everything becomes an experience. And it's from the horrible things that I thought, this one's really it. This one's really it. It is those things that teach me the lesson, that bring the softness to my heart, that bring the yielding inside of me. It is from the trials and tribulations that I have experienced sober, that I have become a softer, warmer human being inside. I have experienced many things in sobriety. Not the least of which has been that all my chickens came to roost, that first sponsor wished upon me. You see, I always feared that what she said would be the truth. And the day came when it did come true, when my children and I had no communication. And I came home one day and they were so loaded, and we had a big fight and they ran off. I went into a depression. Again, I contemplated an attempted suicide. The young man went and took me to the psycho ward, went home, packed his clothes and left me. And I didn't think that it could possibly be that bad. And it was. And the only reason that I stand before you tonight is because of the people in Alcoholics Anonymous that came around me and held me up. And all the walls that I had ever had came down, and I didn't know they were still up till they came down. And it is from the women that I learned to be a woman. I was finally able to share the secrets of my heart, and you shared the secrets of your heart. And I realized I was not so different. In Alcoholics Anonymous, we learn to be each other's mamas. I have never had a mama, not really. But in Alcoholics Anonymous, I have had every fulfillment of my heart. And it is from the men in Alcoholics Anonymous that have treated me like a lady that I've learned to be a lady. I went to one of you and I said, Dave, what is wrong with me that I can't seem to form a one-to-one relationship, not even with a beautiful man like Bruce? He held me close and said, you are a warm, loving lady, and one day you will know the reason. And I was able to accept that, though all the time that I had heard good words about me, I thought it was because they didn't really know me. I was able to accept that. So I went home and got on my knees and I said, okay, God, I know the reason. Bring him back. And he didn't come back. And I thought about all I ever really wanted was a husband to love me and take care of me and be a good mother. And he had gone between my fingers. And I thought, screw them all, let them do what they damn please, I'm tired. I don't know about the rest of you, but that means surrender in the only language I understand. I went to a meeting in Brentwood. In those days, there's a big sign on the wall that says, God help those that don't try to take over his job. And I made peace with my God. I said, okay, God, I'm never going to be happy again. All you ever want me to do is work with a sick woman and let him puke on me. All right, all right. And I don't know about your higher power, but mine has a weird sense of humor. I threw myself completely and absolutely into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous without any reservation, knowing I'm never going to be happy again. And that is the reason that I walk tall with dignity and self-respect today. That I can have a day like yesterday, when just being myself is enough. Just being by myself is enough. That I don't need to be entertained and I don't have to have somebody to clutch to. Because when I got to the other side of my pain, and there was a lot of pain and a lot of anger at being abandoned sober when I was the best me I had ever been. But when I got to the other side, I touched the power and I touched the strength within me. And I realized that nothing and nobody would ever own me again because I belong to my higher power. And he walks with me daily. He walks with me every moment of the day. And today, nothing and nobody owns me again. Even though I'm in love again, you know, I gotta be in love. Just gotta be. I keep thinking I'm too old to go through that shit anymore, but here it is, comes again about a year ago. It has got to be the healthiest relationship I have ever had. And the reason I know that is because I've had so many to compare it to. And you know, wonderful things has happened to me since then. That was about 8 years ago when I made my total commitment. Gradually, I had to work up to it. I know that. My higher power knew that I couldn't stand all that commitment in the beginning. My kids came back one at a time and they went to work and they put me through school and today I'm self-supporting through my own contributions. And we have become very, very close. Sometimes when all of us are home, one sits on one side of me and the other one sits on the other side of me. And we just love and cry because we're lovers and criers and touchers. And you know, the oldest one, the one I had held in my arms so many years ago, she's turned out to be a 200-pound Mexican mama that married her a skinny little 120-pound little Okie. And they look like the odd couple. But now I guess she's gone to OA now and we really can communicate program and it's beautiful to be able to talk to my children. My youngest one, she still has not relinquished her mother role. The only time she's ever really close to me is when I'm sick. She loves to come and mother me. She has never gotten used to the reverse role of roles and that's okay. But they were going to make me a grandma. God, and I'm so turned on at being a grandma. 2 weeks before I became a grandma, my sister killed herself. The one that had always been held up as an example for me. She was heavy into pills and booze, and she killed herself. And it was my destiny to be the one to find her. And I could not believe what was before my eyes. We had gotten so close in the last 2 years before her death. And I couldn't stand it. I couldn't stand it. And something came together inside of me that said, God is the only giver and the only taker of life. And something came together inside of me. And I knew that it was my higher power. I don't know why I've been spared, except that I know that I am God's melody of life and he sings his song through me. He sings his song through me. And someplace, somewhere, somebody needs to hear the places I come from. And because 2 weeks later, his hand is always light when it's heavy, I became a grandma. And I may have been a failure as a mother, but I'm good as a grandma. I went to visit them a few months ago, and they were sitting very, very close at me. And the oldest one's 5, and the youngest one's 3, and They think that Grandma and Santa Claus are synonymous. I'm telling you, I'm good. And the oldest one looked up at me with all that love shining in her little face. And she says, Grandma, we love you because you bring presents. And I could have missed it all. I could have missed it all. I didn't care. I didn't care. You know, the big book promises me many, many things. Oh, and they have been all fulfilled and continue to be fulfilled within me. Not the least of which in page 83, that says, I will comprehend the word serenity and I will know peace. And I've read that and I've read it and I've read it until it has become ingrained in my soul. Because you see, if you ever had were a person like I was, that I was laying in a bed in Mira Loma, writhing in my own filth, in my agony, and I can't live and I can't die and I can't drink and I can't be sober. There is no road that leads from there to here. There couldn't possibly be a road that leads from there to here if I were not a miracle of this program. And newcomer, don't cheat yourself. Throw yourself completely and absolutely. Do not cheat yourself. Work 10 steps and go to meetings and share your innermost self. And may he touch you as he has touched me. Thank you.